did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media. Every one of them brought us up.
This is Paper Talk, the Irish Examiner GAA podcast.
Hello there and welcome to Paper Talk, the Irish Examiner's GAA Championship podcast. Well, on the programme today, we look back on the Munster Senior Hurling Championship as Cork and Clare book their place in next month's final. Well, then we hear from John Dively about Galway's gut check in the Connacht decider. Our first port of call, though, is to Ennis and to the action in Cusick Park. May not have been the prettiest affair, but it was some emotional day in that famous old Clare ground. Kieran Shannon was there for us. Not the prettiest of games, Kieran, but I don't think you'll find too many people in County Clare complaining on this Monday morning.
No, Colm, like it was a brilliant occasion for, like, the, let's put it this way, the atmosphere or the occasion, you know, was better than the match. The match itself ended up being an anticlimax. The build-up to it was, like I mentioned in the piece today, that because you had neighbour against neighbour. Again, as I was saying, it's a fixture we haven't seen since 1993, and you know, it was in the pre-Man years. So the atmosphere yesterday was electric, but as you said, the game itself was an anticlimax because Limerick were flat. How much of a factor was the 3 weeks in a row? A big one, I would imagine. But by the same token, I think it was going to be Clare's day. Like, they do have, in the Championship supplement we did preview, we were pointing out that Clare have the best home record in hurling. And they've underlined that in this month. They've won both games by 9 points. And as you say, the Clare support column, they've really reconnected with this team, which in a way maybe they haven't had since basically they relinquished their All-Ireland crown in 2014 when they lost to Wexford. This team is back, and they're back with the support of the public behind them.
Has this new Munster Championship been an unqualified success as far as you're concerned?
Well, it's been a huge success. I wrote a piece just a week before it started, and because there were some sceptics still about it. Richie Power was quite critical of it. And the way I put it was the actual format is excellent, but the schedule is off, both in terms of predominantly in what has come to pass, like Kevin Martin in the Leinster Championship. Preview at the launch of that championship, I was pointing out that he was flagging that Offaly were going to be out 4 weeks in a row and how challenging that was going to be, and it was seen that it was painted in terms of that Martin Slam's new championship when the views he gave that day were consistent with what he said in October, which was, look, this will be great playing the best teams in Leinster and the best teams in the country like Kilkenny and Galway, but the way that the scheduling and that's come to pass even in Munster, which has been a rollicking championship. And as I said, it's a shame that we weren't having this game for years. Thinking of the amount of players that only would have played one championship game through the years, but this has been brilliant for that. But it does need tweaking, whereby it is too much for teams to be playing 3 games in 3 weeks, and in some cases 4 games in 4 weeks.
But I think
so it needs tweaking.
The word there, though, Kieran, is tweaking. It isn't an overhaul. It's a very simple fixtures rethink.
Exactly, Colin, because you take, there was 19,000 at Clare Limerick game yesterday, and that was on the back of the momentum. That basically, the more hurling games there are, the more people will actually want to go to see the next game. Whereas you would have had last year, there was only 19,000, and Turles went. It was, as it turned out, one of only 2 games Limerick played. So, yes, the attendance, Sean O'Gohalpin was making this argument that, he preferred it when it was eggs in one basket, that as a standalone game and, pre-backdoor, and then even when the backdoor came in, it was a knockout game within Munster, where, let's say, you might get, 40,000 at it under this format. Like, we've had Cork Limerick, which was 35,000 in the park that Saturday night, which is the biggest Cork Limerick crowd there's been, definitely outside of a Munster final. So the thing is, people want to see more games. So, it's been a huge success that way, and we're getting to see better hurling. And Clare are a team that are benefiting from it, because last year they would have had a 10-week layoff going into the Limerick game as the Munster semi-final, and then there was a 5-week gap going into the Munster final, and you could see that it was just too staccato for them. Like, it was just like Shane O'Donnell gave an interesting comments after the game where he spoke about how he, what he loved about this format is that you're not over dwelling on the one game, and you know, it's week in, week out, whereas there was paralysis by analysis in Clare hurling and hurling in general because you had too much time to think about it. I mean, I interviewed Brendan Bugler at the weekend and he was echoing comments that Colin Ryan gave last year, which was they hated a 10-week layoff between league and championship. They liked the league because it was regular games, and you know, Bugler was saying, you know, he would love to be playing in this championship, and you can see the likes of Tony Kelly and the Clare hurlers that their flair players are just thriving on playing week in, week out without having to overthink it, you know, which you can get when there's a 4-week gap between games.
Had we in the media talked up Limerick a bit too much in advance of this game?
Yeah, I mean, my own theory on Limerick was always, I remember writing when Waterford came out in 2015, you know, won the league through 1B, blazed through that league and beat Cork again in the first round. I remember writing, they can't come out of nowhere, can they? Like, it just isn't done. And because people were beginning to think in terms of Limerick that way. And I do think that you really don't get a team that goes from, let's say, number 7 or 8 to number 1. It just doesn't happen. There's a rites of passage that you have to go through. So I've always thought that that Limerick are maybe possibly a bit like Donegal. They're in the Donegal 2011. Phase at the moment, rather than Donegal, and who progressed to Donegal 2012. You know, you don't do that. And I think, as much as you'd say in a bit that long term it's maybe no harm for Limerick, they have missed out on a Munster final. They, you know, the core of this team, it has put them more back than I would have thought, because they haven't been in a Munster final since 2014. You know, an Ireland semi-final 2014. There's still 4 or 5 of the starters from that team that are still key players now. But you know, the core of the team, I do think they would have thrived on playing in front of 50,000 against Cork. So you know, there's still potential Ireland semi-finals, but I think it was always going to be a stretch for them, and I do think this has put them back, even if they do win the quarter final.
Very quick one, just in terms of Limerick. Do they have an issue with discipline? We had a red card for Tom Condon yesterday, and definitely no doubts on that. And a fortnight ago, Aaron Gillan as well too received a red card, and again, no doubts about that in the draw against Cork.
Well, it's something they're going to have to address. You know, they now have time to reflect on the championship as a whole, and as you say, Colin, that's a bit of a trend. So that's something that they will have to, like, it was totally unnecessary yesterday. David Reedy was very unlucky to follow Tom Condon, but that is something that they will have to address. But they are sort of outlier examples. It's not like, oh, there's a red card coming and there was 4 or 5 incidents and someone was always going to get the line. It was sort of an isolated incident. So I wouldn't say that indiscipline is wreaking throughout Limerick hurling, but as you say, such incidents turn matches, and so that is what I'd imagine Kylie will be hammering home to them, and you know, that could cost beyond the suspension, that could cost Condon, who only came on as a sub yesterday anyway, that you know, he could struggle for game time for the rest of this campaign.
Just in terms of tactics, Kieran, did Limerick look at a sweeper system in the second half because of the damage that John Conlon was doing?
Well, definitely going down to 14 men. There was a minute where you thought it was going to be 15-14 for Clare, because there was about a minute before the referee showed the red card to Cannon and then Reedy, and then Reedy was off. But as it turned out, it almost felt like 15-14, the scenario that we thought for that minute actually transpired, because Clare definitely used the the extra man at the back better, because Jamie Shanahan was excellent in that free role. His distribution was excellent, and Clare, I think Anthony Daly was making the point in our paper today that the way Clare played against the wind and used the ball in the second half was exceptional. I do think between the legs it nearly seemed like Limerick did pull up, and then again, like they did against Waterford, Clare just were buzzing from. I think, you know, Donal Maloney referenced it there, that this team, he basically said, like, after Thurles, it's like the shackles are off. There, it was such a, like for 4 years this team has been stuttering, and they now have found their flow, and they had the crowd behind them. And whereas Limerick, I think Limerick were very reliant on the extra space, I think, actually between the leggy nature they would have had from the schedule they've had, impacted upon them. But I think Clare are definitely tactically have evolved from last year, and they're not as straitjacketed. You would have just felt in recent years that players have been, they almost feel like they've been playing like with a joystick, whereas this year there's a structure, but there's also a lot of attitude there. And like some of the interlink play, Tony Kelly had a very quiet first half. You wouldn't have known he was playing early, but the way he thundered into the game at the start of the second half, he had 2 points within 2 minutes and was involved in a lot of link-up play. And the way some of the offloading between himself and Gavin and even Podge, the way they were linking up. But Peter Duggan is growing both from the freeze and from play. He's rifling over a few too. And, you know, there's more in this Clare team, because like you're looking at something like Conor McGrath coming in with 5 minutes to go, and you're thinking, you know, he would have been, you know, they're best forward for a couple of years there, 13 to 15 period. You know, he's a pro player and a talented player who'll be champing to get his place for the Munster final. So they've added, I think Clare nearly, you could say, are one of the teams that nearly won the league, because they won their first three games. Okay, they lost a couple, but they were very competitive in all of them. And what they found was they found a stable team. There's Brendan Bugler was making the point that last year in 2017, the lads were rotating the goalie, and that's very difficult for the backs outside to develop a trust and a relationship when the goalie is interchanging, just to have that understanding, that link and that trust. And Clare now have that. There's a stability about their selection, consistency in their selection, and there's a telepathy developing there between a lot of those players. And, you know, this will suit them going into the Munster final. It's only a 2 week wait as opposed to last year's 5 week wait, and they're going to be very dangerous opponents for Cork.
Okay, mention of Cork there. Now, obviously, you weren't in Thurles for their game against Waterford yesterday, but Cork's passage to this Munster final, it was all flash last season. More functional this season?
Sorry, Cullum?
I was saying that Cork's progression to this Munster final was very much all flash in 2017, more functional in 2018?
Possibly, but like they're still racking up scores, and like I suppose last year was more dramatic in that just they were ranked the fifth team in Munster, because that's what they pretty much were the previous year in 2016. So each year, each game they entered as underdogs, and particularly obviously the Limerick and Waterford games, or sorry, the Tipperary and Waterford games last year. But this year, like, you have to say that there's a consistency about them. You know, I think Anthony was making the point, like, that, you know, you have to say that there's only one game they've lost in championship now, that, you know, they've had eight championship games and they've only lost one of them, and that was obviously hinged, turned on Damien Cahillan sending off. So, you know, you could argue that there maybe, I wouldn't say functional, because there's just, I think Enda put it very well, that, you know, that they're the easiest team to watch, and they're also maybe the easiest team to play against, as in they're more orthodox, but they're not the surprise package there last year. But that would suggest that they're just, I would say, more stability, or they're actually more reliable now than they would be functional as such. But you know, that I think Enda's touched on it, as much as there's those forwards, and you know, you've got to say again, there's a consistency in selection now with Cork, which you mightn't have had for a few years. Players are making positions their own, making that jersey their own. Clare would not fear them either. And what will be an interesting dynamic, I fancy Cork last year's Munster final, as much as some people were still making them favourites, in that I felt Clare hadn't brought an aggression to their game. They hadn't upped the work rate the way that Cork had demonstrated in the two opening games in last year's Munster Championship, along with the Cork crowd. And when you just see a sea of red behind those goals, like that and Cork, and you know, the minor team fed off that, and then Cork had an early goal, Alan Kelly and Leicester's Munster final, like, I Clare will bring a bigger crowd. I think they're very stunned by that game off the field in terms of how they were outnumbered, and also tactically how they, let's just say, paralysis by analysis, and how they did deal with the Nash puck out. Clare aren't going to beat themselves this year. There's going to be, I think, like, it could be nearly like you're approaching back to like 9 years and when there was a Clare army going thoroughless. You know, it's not going to be 8-1 like it was last year. And, you know, also Clare have upped the work rate and the aggression the way that Cork did last year significantly from the previous year. So it's going to be a humdinger. You know, like, as close as that Munster final was last year, it was only, you know, when Cathalan burst away and Cork ended up winning by 5 points in the final minutes. That was a close game, but still, Clare hadn't played particularly well, whereas I think we're in for a cracking Munster final.
We have the makings of a Cork minor on that leg, Kelly, Mick. What do you think? Huh? He has everything.
Yeah. He's too many notions. He's a fair weather hurler, no guts. It's on match of the day, ought to be. Did you see him out there today?
Jesus Christ, Kelly, look at the stadium.
We haven't been up training all week. What's gotten into you?
Exams next week. I'm doing a lot of study.
That's not the story I hear. The other lads have exams too, it doesn't stop them coming up. Whatever about the training, there's always the match on Sunday. You'll be up for it, won't you?
I don't know.
There'll be county selectors there. If you play well, you'll make the minors, you have it in you. If you make the county minors, you won't have to worry about exams. I've put young fellas through my hands, no education to speak. They sailed into jobs in the bank.
I want a bit more effort, lads. Now, we've the Batons of this lot. With a bit more effort, we can bet them all the way back to Mitchellstown. But we must be merciless with them. Take no fucking prisoners! Excuse me, Father.
If you make more space for ourselves, if you can take your guy out to the wing, right? And you play off him.
We'll be more in your line to listen, Kelly. You think it was a camogie match the way you're playing? You're like a young one afraid of getting a lather on a tights.
We're not getting any ball in the forward line. What are we supposed to do? We're losing at midfield.
Shut up! I'm in charge here. And if you came up training, maybe you'd get more of the ball.
Where is he?
Not the line.
Where is he?
You can forget about him! Get on your carrier! There'll be no job in the bank for you!
Rob! I'm calling anyway!
Okay, and our thanks to Kieran Shannon for the overview of the Munster Senior Hurling Championship. Now, we'll turn our attention to football. The first of the provincial football finals played over the weekend. Dr. Hyde Park hosted Galway versus Roscommon. Galway the favourites and recorded victory 16 points to 2-6. But John Dively, was it as straightforward and as easy as that scoreline suggests?
A mixed bag, really, for Galway. I suppose, Colin, to be fair, first half, Galway just had a lot of errors that you wouldn't expect them to have. And it was a combination of a little bit of nerves and obviously Roscommon throwing down the gauntlet to Galway. They got stuck into them and Galway lost the ball, you know, 9 or 10 times very badly in the first half. And it just galvanised Roscommon, and Roscommon very patient, used the ball well and took their scores well in the first half. And Galway needed to obviously cut out the mistakes. Now, they still lost possession maybe 9 or 10 times in the second half as well, Galway, but Roscommon didn't punish them on the scoreboard, and that just allowed Galway then to, you know, I suppose, ease their way into the game, get a couple of scores, and then drive it home, you know, in the last 7 or 8 minutes.
Was that sluggish start down to Galway, or was it the tactical setup of Roscommon?
A bit of both. I mean, to be fair to Roscommon, they were well set up and they knew what Galway were going to bring to the table, and they had their homework done. And on the Galway side, probably, you know, the Sligo game where they had so much time on the ball and everything seemed to work for them, you know, it was up a notch. The intensity was up a notch, and any mistake that Galway made was going to be scrutinised more and probably punished more than what Sligo did. So it took Galway just that little bit of time to come to grips with a higher intensity, you know, a Division One side in effect, really, which is what Roscommon are. But once they got to grips with it, you know, they really had the platform around the middle third. They had enough ball to win the game a lot more convincingly than they did, I felt, in the end. Yes, you know, it was obviously, you know, the game was in the melting pot right up till the end.
Okay, if you were a Roscommon supporter this morning, where would you say it was lost?
You know, their shooting really let them down. You have to say their shooting. I mean, just their shot execution. It was panic shots in the second half. And, like, they stripped Galway very well of possession in the first 10 minutes of the second half. And, you know, up the field, drove up the field. And just badly taken shots, really, you know. Were they right to take the shots? They probably were. It's just the shot execution. So they'll feel very disappointed in themselves that the finish line was there and they couldn't get it. So I think that's where they'll feel most kind of hurt this morning, that they didn't take their chances when they presented themselves.
The Galway formation or approach has been criticised a lot so far this year. Won a lot of plaudits, though, for the way they set up then against Sligo. What was the tactical layout on Sunday?
Yeah, they you know, they set back a little bit in the first half again. And to really see, I suppose, what Roscommon could do against them, and could they penetrate them, and could they get in, and they showed at times that they could. So from a Galway point of view, you know, while we have the numbers back, you know, it was obvious to see from anyone that was there, and I'm sure on television, that they weren't pushing out on their men. And, you know, Inda Smith and Devaney and Brian Stack, you know, were getting, and Kilroy was obviously well dropped deep. They had so much time on the ball, and they could just thread the passes through to the Murchison side and Donald Smith inside. And the Med Galway looked kind of, I suppose, ordinary defensively when they were allowed so much room on the ball. So that would be a little bit of disappointment for Galway. Then, you know, up front, Galway had the breeze, and there was a couple of times there where Galway were looking to play the ball inside to Comer or maybe Ian Burke. And when they decided then not to play it in the last second, they took the shot on. So it was kind of, you know, it looked like a shot on goal, but it was a lot of hesitation. You know, they didn't know whether to try and pass it in or take the shot, and it didn't come off at all in the first half. And, you know, for Eamon Brannigan to have three wides, Johnny Heaney not really to have a shot on goal, in one way it's positive for Galway, because our half forward line were the best players against Sligo. And then, you know, yesterday you had the full forward line who were the stars on the scoreboard. So that is a positive for Galway, in that they're not relying on one player. They're not relying solely on Damien Comer to get all the scores, or Ian Burke, or Shane Walsh. You know, they can mix and match it, and that is something they have to take confidence with going forward, that they're not relying on two individuals out of six to score. They have scorers, and, you know, people can be negative about them. They're winning. No one wants perfect performance at this stage of the year. You know, you just want to keep chipping away, stay in the competition. It's all about keep producing it, get over the line, and be there the next day. And that's what they're doing at the moment.
Okay, as you said, they're not relying on one player, but we should still give credit to one player in particular from yesterday. Shane Walsh, 8 points in Championship football. Some going.
Yeah, it was fantastic. You know, and I was personally delighted. He's a clubmate of my own, so it was great to see him. You know, produce what we all know he can do consistently well over the game. And you know, the points were fantastic. You know, right and left. It was interesting. All the frees that were scored yesterday were all with left foot. Shane and obviously Jeremy Murty with the left foot, and no right-footed free taker scored yesterday, which was a strange thing in a match, in a Gaelic football match. But Shane stood up to the plate, he tackled back, he made some brilliant runs, he passed the ball inside well at most of the time. I think he had only two shots that really weren't up to his standards. One in the first half, it looked like it was a goal shot, but, you know, it wasn't a good goal shot, and he had a wide in the second half. But the most pleasing thing was, you know, in the end, the couple of frees that he got, and he could have went for glory. He didn't, you know, he played the ball around, and he showed great maturity and game management and we ended up getting two good points out of them. So very, very pleasing for Shane, and you know, his form is consistent, which is what we want from Shane Walsh. We want a consistent performance every day rather than scoring 12, 13 points one day and nothing the next day.
Okay, well, a Connacht title secured. First team as well, too, into the Super 8s. Where will this summer end for Galway, John?
Well, I mean, the goal has to be to reach a semi-final. That's the only thing they can aim for now at the moment. And they have three games to qualify for a semi-final. You know, in theory, they can win one game and make the semi-finals. More realistically, they'll need to win two out of their three games. Is it achievable? It is. I mean, they won't fear any of the Munster champions, whoever it is. They won't fear Kerry or Cork. They won't fear the runners-up from Leinster or the qualifiers, or the runners-up from Ulster or the qualifier winners. So it really is in their grasp. I suppose it depends on who they get at home. That is the big thing. So I haven't looked that far ahead who they're going to be playing at home, but it's very achievable. It's very, very achievable, and it should be really, you know, they're back to their clubs this week, and I'm sure once Kevin pulls them in next week, that will be the new goal, to put in three consistent performances and ultimately try and at least get two victories to secure a semi-final spot.
And that's it from this edition of Paper Talk. Our thanks, as always, to our guests, Kieran Shannon, and to John Dively, and also to Larry Ryan, who produced today's podcast. Don't forget, you can check in with us same time, same place next week. We're available on iTunes, on SoundCloud, and on irishexaminer.com/papertalk.
A glossary of GAA terms. Today's term, pull hard. He's no relation.
Hang on. Your father wasn't a third cousin once removed of my mother, was he? No? Grandson! Ah!
Vigorous ground hurling made possible by no familial bond.
For the very definition in evocative GAA coverage, read the Irish Examiner's team of experts for insights and precise analysis on all this weekend's action. Only in this Monday's Irish Examiner. We define the games that define your summer.